Hey folks, you're listening to the Money Date Podcast, a podcast that my husband and I launched to help young couples get real about their money.
We'll ask our friends and a few strangers all the uncomfortable and awkward questions about how they handle their money.
All the gory details, and hopefully a few tips and tricks along the way that you can pick up and use in your own relationship. Welcome to the next episode of the Money Date. Today we have Danielle and Adam, who are one of my favorite couples because they podcast frequently and very honestly about the trials and tribulations of their relationship. Today, they're joining us to talk to us about money and how they've navigated money decisions or lack thereof in their relationship.
We're really excited to have you. You guys are a ton of fun. And as Danielle admitted before we started recording, you know, open books. So it's one of the reasons that we wanted to have the convo with you and very excited to jump right in. But before we did so, wanted a little bit of a background for us and for our audience. Tell us a little bit about how the two of you met.
Oh, man. How long do you have?
Our story is actually, you want me to tell it real fast? Yeah, because y'all take forever. We met actually in high school when we were both juniors in high school, and Adam and I went to prep schools actually right down the street from each other, and he was kind of the known bad boy at his prep school, and my friend for some reason thought I would like him and set us up. We dated for like 2 weeks before I realized he was like the worst human being on the planet.
Oh, God.
See Adam's face.
But first of all, okay, the reason that we were first introduced is because I heard, oh, there's this girl going around my school dating all the guys.
So this is like, interesting.
Yeah, let me get in on this.
Thickens.
And that's what she's all about. Yeah, I found the bad one.
So then we didn't talk for like 2 years. Fast forward a few years when we'd had some like miscommunication of him trying to get together with me when I was at college and vice versa. And then I was on in 1999, I guess, when I was a senior in college, I went on a dating app and saw his picture and was like, oh my God, I know that guy.
Wow.
And, you know, but on a dating app, they don't have the real name. It's like a fake name. And
fake name? Do you remember?
You know,
do you remember what name you picked, Adam?
I don't remember. I wish I did. I so wish I did. I'm sure it was super cheesy, but no, I don't remember. But I messaged him and was like, are you Adam, who went to, you know, the Hun School and graduated? And he messaged me back and it was just took off from there.
Our story is very similar. We met when we were in middle school, but reconnected in college. Okay. And it's always fun to come back together and see each other many years later.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say our story is similar. Dalmar was also the worst human being.
Similar reputation, I would say.
But in your mind, you were great, right?
Yeah,
come on.
Right, of course. Perfect. Yes. In every way. And that hasn't changed up until today.
So what had changed in the interim? Obviously, some time had passed. Adam went from being the worst human being in the world to one you were entertaining possibly having a relationship with. What changed in the intervening time?
I think we both...
Let's back up.
What?
I wasn't the worst human being in the world.
Stand up, Adam.
I know, it's true. You never thought that. We had a solid connection and we were both kind of bad people in our own ways.
I guess so.
We connected because we had that...
Right. We always had like a deep connection. And I think with some time passed, you know, he maybe got over some of the bad boy stuff. Mm-hmm. And I had been dating a lot in New York and realized that guys were kind of jerks in general. And then when we reconnected, what I really liked about him was that after the first night we went out, the next day, you know, in New York, people play all kinds of games, right?
Sure.
Like, oh, you got to wait 4 days and don't message her too soon. And, I can't act like I like her. Well, he literally like went home and the next day by 1 o'clock p.m., he was calling me like, I want to see you again.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Do you know the movie Swingers?
Yes.
Yep.
So that was a big movie for us back in our dating days, but I was big into it before I met Danielle. And there's that scene in that movie where he meets the girl at the bar and he goes back to the table with his friends. And the whole conversation about, well, how long do you wait to call?
Yeah.
And, you know, and they go back and forth about that whole thing. And that stuck out in my mind tremendously. And I think that was probably one of the reasons that I didn't want to screw it up and wait too long. Yes. So I owe that movie the respect because I called you the next day.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, and that's, I think, what did it.
That's amazing.
It is. It solidified it.
Oh, okay. I thought you were being sarcastic.
No.
You're like, this guy's serious. He's into me.
And transparent, too.
Yeah, he's not playing any games, which was so refreshing, you know, when I was dealing with just dating guys who, you know, nothing was up front. Everything was just very...
Yeah.
Annoying.
And that's stuck, right? Because a big piece of who you guys are is a couple who is transparent about, you know, both what works and what's challenging about making a relationship work. And so that's awesome. That's continued. One of the things that's challenging for people is having sort of honest and transparent conversations about money. And we're curious, you know, how long after getting together and getting serious did finances and the money conversations come up in your relationship?
Well, let's
week and a half ago.
Mind you, I was going to say we have to catch up to today. You have three kids today. Yeah. How many dogs do you guys have? Happened.
Yeah, we have three kids. We have two dogs. Yeah, we have a 13-year-old girl, a 10-year-old, I'm sorry, 11-year-old now boy, and 7-year-old boy, and two rescue dogs from Puerto Rico.
I imagine a busy life.
It is. It's very busy, yeah.
And so money came up a week and a half ago.
Yeah. First of all, we got married very young. We got married. We were 24. I basically graduated college and went out into the world with Adam. And we had a very traditional, I think, relationship from the start. You know, I worked for a few years and then I got pregnant. You know, I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom and he seemed on board with that. So we sort of just took over the roles, very, very traditional roles of me staying home and him going to work, and sort of had those separate departments in the relationship, which at the time seemed to be working, probably was not.
Adam, what do you think?
We made all of our major decisions when we were very young, kind of like Danielle just said. You know, we were married very young. We had kids very young. We moved into a house very young. So we made all of our big decisions when I think we were probably too young to do so. On top of that, we're both very irresponsible big spenders. It's always been that way. And it wasn't until a week and a half ago, so 25 years later.
No, it wasn't a week and a half ago.
It's been very recent that we're starting to get on top of our money game. And honestly, I think it has to do with this podcast, because we've been talking to so many different people and discovering so many different ways to actually make this a reality for us. So we unfortunately don't have any great info yet as to how we're doing so far because it's very new and we're just starting to make this thing happen.
But what I love about your guys' story is you guys have been really honest about the stuff that's not gone well. And, you know, we sometimes have couples on the podcast who talk a lot about their successes, but talking about your failures sometimes can feel embarrassing or even just terrifying.
Well, absolutely. But I think that's kind of what makes us different and kind of caught on. Everybody's thrilled to go on and say, hey, I've done this and I'm very proud about this. But we started talking about our differences, the negative things that have happened within our marriage, in our relationship, and it relates to a lot of people. And most people can finally say, oh my God, it's not me.
Yeah. I'm not alone.
It's not just us.
Coming back to a thing you said is, you know, you said you guys played these traditional roles. Did the same thing happen with money? Like, I know in the past when I've heard you talk about this, Danielle, you talk about how Adam typically was sort of the money decision maker in your relationship. What was that dynamic like? How did you guys even settle into that dynamic?
It was hard because Adam sort of felt like, I think he was maybe a little resentful that I was staying home. I sort of just made the decision that I was going to stay home. I don't know how much we really ever talked about it. And then I think he also, I think he would have liked to have had a two person, I don't know, what do you say, two working
two-income
spouses.
Two-income family.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So I think he really did want to make big purchases. You know, he really wanted to buy a big house. He wanted nice cars. I was a little bit more comfortable with staying in a smaller house and, not having maybe the luxury items so I could stay home and everything. And I was very comfortable like that. But I think he wanted more. So it was hard because I was sort of willing to settle and he wasn't. So that made it difficult.
Working through the podcast together has made you pay attention or put a spotlight on your finances again. When it comes to figuring this out or figuring this out differently, What's the first thing you did and how did that go?
What's the first thing we did? That's a good question. I think probably just realizing how much more we were spending than we really could be spending. And also realizing that, you know, we really want to do this podcast and stuff, but you know, the first year or so, you don't make much money. Yeah. So if we're really going to do it, and then we can't, you know, we haven't been going out to dinner as much. We used to go out once, twice, three times a week sometimes to dinner. We used to probably go, Adam was big into Atlantic City. He used to go to Atlantic City all the time. He hasn't been doing that. You know, we used to go to New York probably once every other month. We're not really doing that. You know, we're still trying to spend time together, but we're being definitely a lot more conscious, aware about it.
Yeah. Totally. And what changed when you guys had kids or when you got your first dog? Did any of those money dynamics or those conversations evolve at all?
No.
Yeah, it's really true.
We honestly did not have money conversations for years. Just to be completely honest, it was just, all right, we have some money, let's spend it and not even talk about it.
Yep.
You spend it on whatever, I spent it on whatever, and hopefully there was still money left after the day was over. And we didn't really even concentrate on it.
Yeah. So indulge me a little. Tell me about some of those bad money habits. Like, tell me about what being a spender looked like for you guys.
Well, I can think what Danielle was just saying, the constant going out to eat, always having, you know, nice-ish cars, the houses, vacations. I was going to Atlantic City a lot, but also tech stuff. I love Apple products. Yeah. I always have since like the Apple IIe. So like I've been a fan forever. Yeah, if I wanted it, I bought it.
Yep.
And it, you know, like I said, the tech stuff. I was huge also into the monthly box clubs that are now.
Right.
That are all over the place. I was signing up left and right for those things and loving everything I received. We love wine, buying tons of wine, probably better wines than we should have been buying.
Are the better wines better?
Keep going.
Just
if
tell
you
me
want.
That, Adam.
I think in my mind, I thought they were, so they were. And look, if you're buying crap, it's not good. It's like if you're buying Boone's Farm, I mean, you're going to get crap. But you know,
they're sponsoring us, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Sorry, Boone's.
Yeah, really. But you know, there's a price range. If you stay over the $10 a bottle kind of price range, you're fine.
Yeah.
I think there's something to be said about walking into a store and being a big spender and how you're treated and how you feel. And
yeah, that's a great point.
When Adam would walk into the wine store and everybody knew him and they would take him to the nicer section, you know, there's something to be, there's a feeling that goes with that.
Totally.
You know, so that probably was part of it too.
Yeah, I hope that was enough examples there just to satisfy the question.
Well, also just having kids. I mean, sure. We live probably I would say an upper middle class suburb. And it's not like, I don't know where you all grew up or, you know, what your parents were like as far as your activities or, but when I grew up, my parents said to me, you pick one activity and you do it. And right now in our area, I mean, there are kids playing three sports at a time. And
oh my God.
I mean, it's insane. And, you know, they're every single day after school is something different. And it really gets expensive, especially if you have three kids. Camp is ridiculously expensive. You know, sleepaway camp can be per child $12,000 per summer.
Oh my
I know.
God.
And if you have three kids, you know, you can't offer to one and then not offer to the others.
Hunger Games this. One kid gets to go based on the rest
Of the year. You know, you sort of hope, you're sort of like, so you don't want to go to sleepaway camp, right? Like, it's everything. I mean, having kids is super expensive. And you look around you and you're like, well, I'm not going to be the parent whose kid is sitting home Monday through Friday. You know, and I'm not going outside and teaching them soccer myself. So it's hard.
We take financial conversations at maybe too nuclear a level sometimes, thinking that this is a conversation that's just happening in someone's head or between a couple. But really what you're talking about and highlighting is that what other parents do, particularly if they have children and you have children, and the decisions they make for their kids have sort of spillover effects on how you decide to handle or manage your finances. You know, if a kid comes home and says, well, I want to go to camp because, you know, Billy or Jane is going, it suddenly changes your dynamic and your conversation at home.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I don't know if everywhere is like that. I think there are places where maybe it's not quite as bad, but where we live, it is number one, an expensive place to live anyway, but number two, there's just this coal over scheduling. It's almost like an epidemic. It's just so much money.
Yeah. This is exactly why parenting terrifies me. It's stories like these I hear and I'm like, oh my gosh. Or even the mom phenomenon that you hear a lot about, of moms who work versus moms who stay home and the battle that ensues between.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. You know, it's all challenging, but it's also so rewarding. And if it's something you choose to do, you know, you learn along the way, which is exactly what we're doing, and you figure it out. Now I figure out my daughter's 13. And at this point I'm sort of like, okay, well, they could be doing more around the house. So we don't have a cleaning person once a week. We could have one every other week. And we're trying to make those changes now, which is obviously harder than just doing it from when they were younger, but it's better than never doing it. And that's what you do. You learn along the way and you're going to make mistakes and hopefully you'll get back on track.
You're talking about change there, and there are some changes that we're comfortable making, but you talked about all the habits, spending habits that the both of you have had to change. Of those changes, are there any that were very frightening? What were they, and how did you sort of negotiate those challenges and that fear?
Or the ones that you guys didn't agree on even.
Yeah.
The scariest thing for me was the prospect of going back to work. Mm. That was really scary because for me, raising three kids is a full-time job. And everyone always says, oh, as they get older, you don't need to be home as much. Well, I totally disagree. For me and for my situation, I feel like as my kids are getting older, they need me more and more. Probably when they were younger, in some ways, it was easier to drop them off at school and just pick them up and know that they were okay. And now it's like a whole different ball game. So the podcast in some ways, hopefully, is, you know, we're doing this and making some money and it's giving us some different options. But for me to go back to have a full-time job now, that was really, really scary for me.
How about for you, Adam?
I pretty much, like I said, for the most part, have cut out most of the extraneous purchases.
Yep.
Is that the right word? Extraneous purchases?
Extra? So. Right. Yeah.
plus.
I'm not good with the words, but I try. So the extra stuff, like I said before, the wines, those boxes, the going out to eat, going to Atlantic City, all of those extra things, I've pretty much for almost a year now cut out. And it hurt at first, but I'm at the point now where I don't even miss them. I miss the time that Danielle and I spent together when we were able to go out and have, you know, dinners alone and be out alone. But I feel the same way about us doing this podcast because we get to be alone doing this together. So it kind of compensates for, instead of going out to dinner and spending $150 or whatever it could cost to, you know, go out for the, you know, for the weekend. But also, I think the New York City trips that we did a lot, the vacations, we haven't done a vacation in quite some time. For me, it's the extra stuff. It's getting rid of all of that stuff. And that's what we've done so far. We still have a ways to go with our, you know, daily, everyday spending agreements and budgeting. So we're not quite there yet, but that's kind of the next step for us.
Yeah, totally.
So, we could come back to you with what happened after that.
I will. Follow-up conversation scheduled. Sure. I'm curious, you know, as you guys are diving into some of these money things, like, what is the motivation behind getting your shit together, so to speak?
First of all, we have a 13-year-old. We have about 4 more years to think about how the hell we're going to pay for college. Yeah. And we think she's going to go.
It's kind of a summer camp where we're like, you don't really want to go to college.
Yeah. Right. No. So that really is that. Boy, that really give you, you know,
sure,
some motivation to see where the hell is the money going to come from. And maybe it's an overall sort of societal thing now too. But I think for a little while we were stuff. We want stuff. We love stuff. You know, the nicest, newest. Now it's more, like Adam said about the podcast, you know, sometimes when you start something that you really love and you redirect your energy and you redirect your attention, there's a happiness, I think, that it's bringing us, and a satisfaction that it's bringing us that is replacing what those purchases we're making, that we're feeling more fulfillment doing this and that we don't need all that other stuff anymore.
I relate so strongly to that, Danielle, because I felt very similarly starting Zeta and like focusing on building a company. All of a sudden I was like, I don't care about all the extra stuff. I just like want to go home and spend time with my family when I have that time. The rest of the time, I want to get my work done. Just the way you said it, I thought just captured that feeling so beautifully.
I think for a while we were both sort of searching for something to make us feel worthy and like we were maybe doing something that was giving back and that was worthwhile. And this podcast, as much as it's been exhausting and it's a lot of work, it also has given us this sense of fulfillment and also doing something together for the first time ever, like really doing it together.
Yeah.
We love doing this together, but this is enabling both of us to pursue our separate passions as well, because Danielle was always a writer. She went to school for something. And,
that you know, you definitely know.
Yeah. So she's, you know, she gets to do a ton of writing and, you know, writing down her ideas and writing, you know, whatever she writes on Instagram, because I'm not allowed to look.
Oh, you should. It's quite
so
good.
She gets, I sneak in once in a while. But so she has that too. So when we're not together, she has that to work on by herself. When I'm doing my stuff without her, I love doing the website stuff. I love doing the tech stuff. I love doing the editing. So this is enabling me to play and build a website and have fun with it, knowing that it's going to a good purpose and a good cause for us, for the podcast.
Coming back a little bit to that thing that Danielle said early on, you know, when Danielle, when you made the decision to become a single income couple, and Adam, she mentioned you felt a little bit resentful about that. How do you guys handle that today?
I think I was always a little bit resentful of Danielle staying home, but if she was working, it would be a very different situation for our household and more of a, we got to split the responsibilities of raising the kids.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't know if I should be doing that. Danielle does a much better job than I do or ever would.
Well, I don't know that you would have done that. That's the difference. I don't know that you would have stepped up and done it.
You feel like you would have owned it all, Danielle?
Yeah, I think so. I think that happens a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We just did this episode on the mental load. I think that a lot of times the moms pick up a lot of the slack at home, even when they're working.
What you're saying with when it's like
if I was working, I don't know that it wouldn't have been. We're both working, and you
say that even that they both work, or them and their spouse work. Typically, they still carry a
absolutely
of, yeah raising the kids.
Yeah, right. And I think that's true.
Mm-hmm. Right, and you would not be able to handle that.
No,
and it would be a mess.
It would have. I really think for us, as much as it would have benefited us financially to have a two income family, I also think a lot of the things that we've dealt with and we've gone through, me being home was sort of the only way to deal with it. I think had I been working on top of that, it might have broken us.
I hear that completely.
And we're still here, so something worked.
Dummer's yes, just got a photo of you guys in the background on Instagram, and he's just staring at the photo. Almost as inspiration to as he talks through.
Yeah. No, it's a good photo, but it's the caption I'm actually reading. It's one that you put up a couple of days ago, Danielle, and you're talking about how you wish that you'd known, or that someone had sort of advised the both of you to remember to laugh and laugh at each other and at life, especially when things are hard, not take things so damn seriously. And one of the challenges is, you know, you sort of come upon these sort of nuggets of wisdom a little late sometimes, and hopefully not too late to be able to make a change. And I'm wondering if we applied that to sort of your finances and finances generally, is there anything that you know and have observed today that sort of going back you wish you knew then?
Anything financially that we mm-hmm. could look back and say,
right.
Yeah, everything.
All of it? pretty much. But no, I'm not going to say all of it, because we've had some really great times together spending too much money. Let's say it's a vacation.
Yeah. But that's not even the stuff I would say. I would say we made a very – well, there was a very big – the biggest mistake was we bought a very big house.
Well, that's what I was – that's where I was going to. Oh. I was saying there's some that I wouldn't go back and change.
Right.
Like doing – certain vacations we did together, because I think they cost too much money, but they were so important together that I wouldn't change. But the things that I would are houses and, you know, the cars and, you know,
yeah,
and all of the stuff that also was just a waste.
I would have liked to tell myself there's time. You don't need to prove it all now. Yeah. You know, there's time.
Have it all.
We did make a lot of mistakes, and but also, so we moved into this huge house, and that was a really big issue for us. We were very, I didn't want to move. Adam wanted to move, and as much as it caused a lot of issues for us financially, we also made some of our best friends moving into that house. You know, and they'll be lifelong friends. So
and that's why I did it.
Right.
Well done, Adam.
Listen, I'm always looking out for the best interest of our, you know,
Oracle? Like, is that a better name?
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Is that your dating profile name?
You're getting to know me very well.
Probably.
No, it was Oracle Stud.
Right.
Oracle Stud. Actually, that's not a bad name. Thinking about your kids, because you know, now that you have the hindsight and the perspective and you have the ability to impart some of that onto your kids, is there anything that you guys are doing or even thinking about in terms of prepping and setting them up for success with their finances in the future?
Besides signing to marry rich. No, I'm just kidding.
That doesn't hurt.
I must say that we do have very kind and generous kids. You know, we have kids who are, they're good souls. Yeah. Like, they're good human beings. I think they like nice stuff, but I don't think that they're motivated by it.
What I'm learning is, teach by doing, not by speaking. And they've seen us for 13, 11, and 7 years spending like crazy, and whatever we want, we bought, and we didn't even think about it. And at the same time, say to them, you need to save your money, you need to not buy this thing. So it was kind of not fair of us to teach them in that way. So I think one of the really great reasons that we need to get on top of our game is so that they can see we're really living the talk.
And for a little bit of added inspiration, you know, as I advise couples on their finances, the number one thing they talk about is wanting to get their shit together because they've seen their parents not have their stuff together, or they've been motivated by their parents to get things together because their parents did a great job. So it's really, it's a massive impact that kids have in terms of exactly what you're saying, Adam, seeing how their parents did things and learning from that.
It's hard because you have so many lessons you want to give your kids, and you're trying to figure out, you don't want to be lecturing them all day long about everything. So it's so hard to pick and to choose. And for us, it's constantly, you know, be nice, be kind, be the, you know. And so I guess sometimes I maybe we slack in some of the other departments because that's what I'm so concentrating on. And maybe that's what we're better at. Maybe I'm just not good at teaching the finance stuff, but I can say, I know how to say, you know, this is how you be compassionate and this is how you be generous and whatever. But it's hard because, you know, there's so much you want to teach your kids, but you also don't want to be constantly lecturing them and constantly reprimanding. And so it's a tough balance.
No, I imagine it is. And it is. Aditi brings up the point, because we've noticed just in those conversations that both poor and sort of good habits, money or otherwise, are things that seem to be passed down. And so they come up almost organically in the conversations we've had, where, you know, someone will say, I do this thing. And Aditi is like, that's fantastic. That's remarkable. Where did you pick that up? It's actually one of the hardest things and hardest lessons to learn from a personal finance perspective. And sometimes the story will be as simple as, oh, well, mom or dad always did this one thing, and I don't think they were teaching me as much as just doing that thing. And
It's even the way we fight, though. Like, Dummer and I, we always joke about this. Dummer came from a family whose parents just never fought in front of their kids.
Yeah.
Whereas my parents were the complete opposite. Yeah. And so, you know, I'm much more comfortable being like, wait, what did you just say? Whereas he's like, babe, shh.
Yeah, confrontation
people
much?
People around, dogs around. We talk about this. Yeah. So, totally different vibes.
Danielle and Adam, we wanted to jump into the honeymoon game. So before we started recording today.
Game.
What is it called?
Should we call it something fancy?
We'll call it whatever you
the
like.
The money honey game. The honey money game.
Man, you're learning. Oh, no.
Thank you, Adam. Adam and I are clearly a team, apart from the minimal running shoes, which I think I lost you on the barefoot shoes. But other than that. Oh,
God. That's all right. Adam's shoes aren't much better, I have to say.
What do you mean?
So that might be a topic we talk about in just a minute, because one of the questions is, what's a purchase that your partner has made in the last year that you're still trying to understand? But we'll jump into the first question first, which is, Danielle, we'll start with you. If Adam won $1 million today, what do you think he'd do with the money?
first of all, I have to say what he would do now and what he would have done 10 years ago are completely different. Okay. So
I like that twist, actually. Maybe we could focus on what he would do now and then give us your answer or your best guess at what you think he would have done 10 years ago. And we could talk about how those are different.
Yeah, I would think, you know, I think the first thing he would do is that we would do something luxurious, probably like go into New York and do a shopping and dinner thing. And he would take and a vacation. That would be for sure. But now I think he would probably do some really smart things with the money. I think he would probably, you know, pay off the mortgage and maybe put something away for a rainy day and actually, you know, take some time and actually think about what the right things to do were. So I would be a lot more confident now with what he would do with $1 million than 10 years ago.
From the worst person in the world to super smart. Like,
you know what my answer would be?
Tell me.
I think today my answer would be nothing for 6 months.
Really?
You would sit on it for six months?
For 6 months and think.
Well, while you were sitting, I'd be out shopping. So
that's exactly what I
have. Is that what you wrote?
It's kind of. Well, no. What I wrote was she would take the money and run and go save dogs.
Oh yeah, that might be good. Yeah, I would. I would save dogs.
Oh, the Venn diagram of Oddity and Danielle just got very interesting because Oddity's sort of end goal, like end state, is rescuing all the dogs in the world.
Yeah, my $1 million is a dog sanctuary.
Oh, me too.
But after the shopping spree and the...
Well, at first I have to save my kids, I guess, and then I can save my So, yes.
Set the kids up and then spend the rest on the dogs. Makes
sense. Yes. Cool. Yeah. So that was my first answer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, those are really good. Second question is, what's one WTF purchase that your partner has made in the last year that you don't understand? Let's go with you first this time, Adam.
Babe, you make WTF sound so formal.
Okay, what's one what the fuck purchase?
Thank you.
There's the R version.
Ironically enough, Danielle does this probably weekly.
Oh, shit. Oh, is it food shopping?
Danielle doesn't buy too many things that I look at and I'm like, really? Like, what are you doing? It's really when I see the charge come up on the phone that she just food shopped, and then I come home and there's no food in the house, and I'm like, what is that purchase?
It's a magician.
Organic food is really expensive.
It's true.
Yeah.
So I don't get it once in the last year. I get it like 52 times a year.
Yeah. Some husbands would be like, honey, why were you at Neiman Marcus again? He's did you go to Wegmans again?
It's always the largest bill after rent or your mortgage.
I don't know if this is the last year. It might have been the last 3 years, but it really sticks out in my mind. So I need to talk about it.
What's laid out there?
I would come home. Like Adam said, he's a tech guy.
You don't have to talk about it. Just mention it.
What?
You want to talk about it.
What do I want to talk about?
I don't know. You said you really want to talk. Okay,
I need to say it though. So I come home one day and we have like beautiful TVs all over the house, flat screen TVs with, you know, we have the Sonos, all kinds of stuff. So I come home one day and I walk in my family room and our, I don't know, it must have been like a 48 inch TV is now off the wall and there's some monstrosity hanging on the wall. And I look at him like, our other TV was perfectly okay. And then I see like two more boxes sitting there of TVs.
Oh no.
So he's like they were having a 2-for-1 special, which I knew was a lie, number one. He basically was replacing all our totally fine working beautiful TVs with new, a little better.
A lot better.
Okay, fine. And I was like, what the fuck? really? And I was pissed. I was really upset because number one, you know, he didn't consult me about it. And it wasn't even just one TV. It was like three. So it really, yeah. So that boggled my mind.
Any defense here, Adam?
Yes, I do have a defense because I always have a defense. We had a TV in the basement that came with the house that we bought that our son used to hook up to his game systems, either the Xbox, PlayStation, or whatever. And that TV went out. It stopped working. Literally one of those big, heavy box TVs.
Oh, God, I don't miss those.
Right.
So I said, okay, we have to replace that. So instead of replacing that, let's take the TV in the family room, put that downstairs, and replace the room TV with a much bigger, better, awesomer one, And see my rationale? It makes a lot of sense.
I'm following you 100%.
Son could have gotten a crappy $150 TV, and that would have totally fine. He would not have cared.
But that's not how the story goes.
So okay.
So this is a perfect segue into the next question, which is complete the following sentence. When it comes to money, one thing we cannot agree on is blank.
All right.
You go.
To me?
Yeah.
College.
Tell me more.
Well, Adam didn't go to college. I did. Mm-hmm. I come from a family where college is a really big deal. You know, it just is, you know, it's not an option. You go. And while I'm not 110% convinced that everybody needs to go to college, that I realize the reason should never be just because you can't afford it.
Right.
They're not going to go for some reason. And again, I'm going to very much push for them to go because I still think it's an experience, whether or not you're going to be a lawyer or a doctor or whatever it's going to be. Those 4 years of my life were, you know, huge. Right. And I learned and grew and became, you know, culturally aware and all this stuff that I think you don't get in other, other areas of life.
I think there's plenty of reasons, good reasons to go to college today. But college is very different today than it was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
A lot of reasons. And I don't think today it's as necessary as it was 20, 30 years ago.
Totally.
Let's look at the flip side. When it comes to money, the easiest thing for us to agree on is blank.
We like it. No, what were you going to say?
Said having fun, having spending time together, spending money on us.
Yeah, I said spending money on being alone. Yeah, on just the two of us.
Yeah, for us, the best way we could spend money is a night or two away in New York City together, alone.
I thought you were saying different things there, that Adam was saying the best thing to do is to spend it together. And Danielle, for a moment there, I thought you were saying, no, just on me, myself, and I alone.
I did too. So I was like, are you guys saying same or different things?
I mean, sometimes I would like that to be the case.
The last question.
I'm excited about this question.
Yeah. Why don't you take this one?
I'm excited about this question because of their TV story.
Ah, okay. Go for it.
No, you can ask it. Okay. What's the maximum you would spend up to before you checked in with the other? Adam, what did you say?
I'll let you know when we check in with each other. We kind of talked about this before. We really have never done that properly.
Yeah.
Well, I think now is much different.
That's what I'm saying.
I think I would never make a big purchase without him. I would never spend more. I would say maybe $500 for me is probably the most I would spend. But I think before he would buy whatever he wanted because, you know, he was the breadwinner and he kind of felt like it was a much different mentality. I think now we would talk about it.
But funny enough, like now I'm not looking for
you don't even want it
anymore. Looking to buy those things anymore. So I'm more focused on what we're doing here and not about the stuff.
Right.
So I can't even think of anything now that I would even have to say to Danielle, you know, what do you think about this purchase?
That's wonderful.
So yeah, but those TVs still are in the house.
and let me tell you,
and they better stay until we die.
She's watched them every single day since I purchased them. So she can't get too mad.
Well, I would watch them if they were a lot shittier, too. Sometimes he'll be like, oh, you see the difference of the HD? And I'll be like, what are you fucking talking about?
I do not.
No.
I seriously do not.
Exactly. Like, no, I don't. And I don't care.
Totally. You would care now if you went back.
Well, Adam and Danielle, thank you guys for joining us tonight. Yes, we're so thrilled to have you guys. You guys are great. You're a ton of fun. And just appreciate your candor and the sort of lightness that you bring to the conversation.
No, absolutely.
Oh, thank you. And we appreciate, you know, we're still a very new podcast. We're not even a year in. And so, and you guys really believed in us and took a chance on us. And we're really grateful
for
that.
No,
and
we're excited to partner with you.
As should our listeners, folks, Marriage and Martinis, check it out. Both the podcast and the Instagram feed, which I'm a fan of. Very funny, very honest.
Yeah, and I know a ton of our listeners are now using Zeta, as are we, and it's been great, and it's, you know, and you guys are you're doing something awesome. And there's a lot of couples out there who are going to benefit from it. So that's so great.
I have one parting question, which, you know, the sort of financial discussion conversations are a recent sort of event for you guys. Going through all of that now and sort of the ups and downs that comes with, is there any advice that you'd give to people who are maybe in your position, but maybe just a bit earlier in the process?
So much.
We're trying to sign off with this question.
You know, I would say try to find something that you can do together that is going to bring you fulfillment that isn't money related, you know, that try to have things in your life that you enjoy that don't revolve around spending. I think that was a huge mistake of ours, was that one of our biggest, you know, we love to shop together. We love to, everything we did revolved around money. You know, when we were first dating, we used to play tennis all the time together. And had we kept doing that, we probably would have been just as happy. We just, for some reason, we replaced it with material possessions. And, you know, and I would like to go back and have different hobbies and, you know, find things to do together that wasn't so money centered.
The Money Date podcast is an initiative of Zeta, a company I launched to help couples track and manage their finances together. If you're inspired by what you heard on this show, you can learn more about us at askzeta.com.
And if you'd like to support the podcast, here are a few ways to do so. You can subscribe to it, leave reviews on iTunes, Anchor, or wherever you happen to listen to your podcasts, or share it on social media with your friends. And if you'd like to be a guest on our show, write to us at podcast@askzeta.com.